giving high fives to the crowd as he comes to the finish line, the first ever winner of the T100, and it goes to Magnus Ditlev.
Yeah, and you can see he's excited. Of course he's going to be excited. This is big deal.
And we are live with the man himself, Magnus Ditlev. Came back to Denmark yesterday, but you couldn't escape the local club swimming. Magnus, thank you for coming here on the podcast with Trioaklet, powered by Fusion.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. I'm looking forward.
Yeah, so your brother-in-law and the other guys at Kotoko 64, they didn't give you any free passes just because you went this random race in Miami this weekend?
No, I was. I have to admit, I was on the far back of the lane today, so yeah. I was swimming on the feet of the other guys.
Yeah.
Usually, I am a bit more up in the front rows, but today I was just taking it very easy. Yeah.
So, is it your first proper training after Saturday? You, I know you've been doing a lot of photo shoots and things you have to do with the organization and stuff like that. So first proper training after the race.
So the race was Saturday, and then Sunday was completely packed with a photo shoot from 7 in the morning until 7 in the evening. So that was a pretty busy day. So I didn't get to train there. Unless you count the small jogs, like for the camera in between that. And then Monday was actually, we stayed until Monday evening in the US. So I got a swim and a run in there. And then I've been running every day since that. And also, so this is my first swim back in Denmark as well.
All right, Magnus. So let's talk a little bit about the race. It's not your first time there. And I know if we look at your results, you actually had a DNF. However, this is when it was only in another format, not in the PTO or the T100 format. So you know the venue, you know the climate there. So how much did that play into your preparations? Have you been doing heat training, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've raced there twice actually before, so I really know both the course, but most noticeably, especially the conditions, which are extremely tricky, and the past two times I raced there has gone like really bad. So, and that is, we believe, mainly due to the climate in Florida, which is extremely different than what we are used to in Denmark at this time of the year. So, yeah, I've been doing heat, really like structured and good heat prep for the past 5 weeks, actually. So, been really trying to hone in on getting that right, as like the temperature is like above 30 degrees, and then the humidity is probably what surprises people the most, that it's that really high, plus 70%. So
not that you're going to reveal all your secrets, but heat training, is that like 1 hour of sauna after swimming? Is that like with a heat fan in the famous Swift basement with your in-laws? What have you done, to be more specific?
So there are a lot of different ways you can accomplish heat training in general. We have mainly gone with the sauna training and like active on the bike. So as you say, sitting in the famous basement with a lot of clothes on during a bike ride, and it has been for me, for the 5 week, it has been a combination of 2 times in the sauna a week and then 4 times on the bike. So it's like 6 times a week, approximately 1 hour each session. And then the main thing is really to keep it controlled, which can be very difficult. Like if you sit in a sauna for instance, 40 minutes, the heart rate will just steadily increase and it gets super uncomfortable. But heat training is really about doing it like so that it's really uncomfortable, but still staying within your limits so that you are not absolutely cooked for the rest of the day.
Oh, it's not true, dude. But it's no secret that there's another race coming up in 5 weeks in Singapore. Also fairly humid, I would say. So the heat training continues, I guess.
Yeah, we will probably like get it down to maybe two or three times a week for the first 2 weeks now here, just to get back into a good training rhythm. And then once the races get closer, maybe the last 3 weeks will increase the volume of the heat training again. It's like such an important factor for competing in those hot races.
Exactly. So, Magnus, are you ready to talk a little bit about the race itself?
Yeah.
Okay, Magnus, so you knew the venue and you also knew the competitors. The start list was open, and you know when Alistair is on the start list, he will absolutely smash it from the get-go. And you know Sam Long being this fanboy of Brownlee, he will do the same. So you had the knowledge that we have these guys who will go berserk no matter what, and you also knew that, all right, we have to be a little bit conservative here. So what I know you have been also practicing different strategies, so take me through what went through your instant planning before the race and when the gun went off.
Yeah, so we have been doing, from the training I've been doing back home in Denmark, we really knew that the shape was, yeah, probably better than ever. So I came in to Miami with a huge confidence. And then once I actually arrived at the venue and got to train on the course leading into the race, I actually had some pretty bad sessions over there, which like took us a bit of surprise, but I think actually they were not that bad. It was just the conditions that were absolutely brutal. But those sessions where we, like, for instance, one day we were like running at the time of the day where we were going to do the race, and we could just see that the heart rate at given paces was just, yeah, absolutely crazy high. So we really learned a lot from training there and the days leading in. And we probably decided to do quite a conservative strategy and rather kind of build into the race, especially on the bike and run. So with that in mind, we planned for like a very controlled effort on the bike and also making sure not to go too hard on the beginning of the run, which I think turned out to be the absolute best strategy you could do, as a lot of people ended up blowing up completely.
Exactly. And the swim was with an Australian exit, so you could actually follow you guys along most of the way. You were the first lap, the first 1,000 meters, you were about 20 seconds behind the leaders and then lost another 30 to 40 seconds there. I know you've been prepared for a situation like that, but were you still a bit worried at that point when you came into T1?
Yeah, I think like the swim, I actually got off to a really good start for the first maybe 700 meters. I was actually with the front group, which I haven't been before in a PTO race. So I was really stoked with that. But then I was actually the one that had to let the front group go, which at that time really annoyed me and pissed me off that I was in the situation I've been dreaming of, and then I'm the one that opens up the gap to the front. So that was quite difficult. And then basically we swam from there. I think it was Clément Mignon and Rudy van Berg that came past me and pulled the second pack. But I think still, like, just if you would take the split to the back of the front pack, it was maybe like 45 seconds, which is definitely the best swimmer I have had in a PTO race so far. I also heard some rumors about the top swimmers have been like talking together and making sure they wanted to pace it out as fast as they could, possibly to get rid of Jason and I. So I think of course, I would have loved to be in the front group, but the swim in these PTO races is probably the closest I'm ever going to get to like short distance. So the swim level in these races are just way higher than in like a traditional Ironman. So I think still 45 seconds from the front is better than last year, where it was more like 1.5 minutes.
Exactly.
So I wasn't overly like concerned about that gap.
Maybe we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, Magnus, but before this race, I would say you would point out the weaker swimmers there, and you would say they will have no chance, absolutely no chance, to make it to the podium. And that was not what happened at all. In fact, Sam Long, who was not dead last, then he was way back at the swim. He became second and was only like 35 seconds behind you at the end there. So, do you think it's time to maybe reconsider this? View that if you are a weaker swimmer, then you have no chance in a future race?
I think it really depends on the circumstances of the race. Now that Miami is on a course where the bike tends to split up a lot and it's like so tough conditions, it generally favors like strong bikers and like generally just strong guys on the land, so that, and then when we have also the 20 meter rule in a race like that, then as you probably also noticed on the live stream, people were not really riding in groups or anything larger than maybe two or three people all the way through the field. So it was just like split up everywhere. And when that happens, it's really a good situation for guys like Sam Long and myself. So I wasn't, I also knew that Sam, he really tends to be in great shape in the beginning of the season, usually. So I knew that some of the other guys probably wasn't in their peak shape, but I figured that Sam Long would be in a pretty, pretty strong shape. So it wasn't, he was one of the guys that we had on the radar, but still I think he also surprised me with how strong he, especially the run that he delivered.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the bike. For the first half, which means the first 40 kilometers, the guys up front, Alistair Brownlee and the French guy, Mathis?
Mathis,
They really drilled it up front there. And you having this more conservative approach, was that on purpose, that you wanted to maybe attack a little bit or push a little bit more on the back half of the bike leg?
Yeah, so I was trying to pace it as steady and evenly as I could, and then just ride a bit below what, like if it has been a cold race, I would have ridden probably more aggressively. But I think it was... So one lap is around 4 minutes and 20 seconds. So I had my supporter Casper with me, who was standing every 4.5 minutes with a blackboard giving me splits to everyone. So I really had a good overview of what was happening around me, and I could see that in the beginning, Mathis and Alistair really, I think they took maybe 20 seconds out of me quite quickly. And then it started to stabilize around that. And then after, as you say, maybe 30 or 40K, I started gaining time on them as well. So I knew that I was the one riding fastest on the course, and I felt, well within my comfort zone. And then I picked up Sam Laidlaw along the way, and but I was just pulling him. He didn't turn up to the front. So I just, the entire bike, actually, I was just minding my own business.
Okay.
And then when we started to like come closer to transition two, I tried to time it so that I caught the front group with maybe one or two laps to go. So I could kind of have because even though it's 20 meters, you still get a small break, or especially mental break, from sitting in the group. So I didn't want to catch them too early, so that they maybe wanted me to go to the front and take some turns. So I caught them with two laps to go, which was perfect because then I had like a perfect reason for not going to the front after I caught them, as I had been riding the entire race, closing the gap, and then yeah, just rode with them for the rest of the bike until transition.
Magnus, if we look at some of the numbers, I believe have been looking a little bit into the previous races. Of course, this is a super fast course, no doubt about that. But it's the fastest race at this format ever. Like going 47 kilometers per hour, averaging. You also released your numbers actually, 390 watts normalized. So is this by far the hardest race you've ever done, or would you say that?
I wouldn't say it's the hardest course. I think Daytona course is a bit harder. Here you have like small turns where you get small breaks all the time, so it's easy to break up into pieces and technical sections and so on. So, but I think it's the competition that makes the race hard, and here you had like all the strong guys, so it's definitely up there amongst one of the toughest races I've done, especially when you consider the climate and also mainly on the run. That is where it really gets tough.
Exactly,
these conditions
at the bike stands there, you took plenty of time, you looked so confident, and people who watched the race noticed that you grabbed this small bag with a bottle. Was there also ice in it, or can you reveal a little bit of that?
Yeah, so I think the main theme for the race in general was probably that the strategy we put up regarding both the heat prep that went into the race, but also the cooling strategies that I used during the race was like on another level compared to the competition. And I think that is what really gave me the advantage of gaining time on, for instance, Alistair and Laidlaw when they started to struggle in the heat. So we had also, apart from the heat prep, made a really good plan of how I'm going to cool myself down during the race. It's some small things that I prefer to keep for myself.
Of course.
If you watch the race, you can see what I'm doing, and it's not that difficult to figure out. But I noticed also from having watched the race afterwards that a lot of the people didn't take the time in aid stations to really get the ice that helps a lot and cool down with water and everything you can grab through the aid stations.
If we look at the run itself, you are like 10 seconds away from what you've done I know, of course, you didn't really race at this format too much, maybe one race last year, but your splits are like the same as in the PTO US Open, for instance. So even though it's super hot and everything, and you have been really drilling that bike, you looked smooth on the run.
Yeah. Like the run was probably the thing that has been where I have felt the biggest improvement in training. So when I entered second transition, I was very confident in my running, and I thought that I thought that Alistair would probably go out in a really hard pace, and he did that. And then I thought that Sam was probably not in the like October shape that he is always in, so I thought he might struggle at the back end of the run. So it was mainly Mattis that I was worried about. He's such a strong guy all around. So, but I could see I was a bit slow on transition, and he was. So I ran up to him, and I could see from his stride that he didn't look. He looked a bit tired already from the beginning. So there, then I was just kind of trying to stay patient. And you really have to do the first part of the run when it's so hot and feel like you are just jogging because you can just overheat in such a short period of time if you go out too fast. So as you say, it looked comfortable, and I felt also both actually throughout the bike and run that I was quite within my limits.
You have been working a little bit with Kasper, of course, who is now a coach of Sweat Elite, and also before this race, Sweat Elite released this video of you training and preparing specific for this race. And you have your, you have like after a very hard bike session, you did like 3x5K in 3:00, like 3:15 pace. And if you look at this race, I think your average like 3:35. So maybe if you look at the race, it seems like jogging to where your actual form is. But since you also released your heart rates and data from that, you could see that you're really working hard. So I guess this just shows how much the heat plays into all this.
Yeah, that's also, I mentioned that I felt off in the week leading into the race. Like we came to Miami having done some very specific work in Denmark, and then we tried to, of course, you know that the heat plays a factor, but we tried to do some like similar stuff in the Miami heat, and I was just like way off. So that kind of worried us a bit. And then, yeah, I'm working really closely with a physiologist in Team Denmark that kind of tried to study or read up on all the studies that has been done around how much your performance actually declines when it's hot like that. And then we tried to calculate backwards and see what that would equate to. And then it actually ended up being the pace that I was running. So yeah, it's like way off compared to what I think everyone would have done if it was a cold race, but it just shows how much the heat and humidity plays in on a day like that.
If we talk about the race in general, not maybe focusing too much on your own performance, are there things you have noticed about some of the other guys you are going to meet again and again, both in these races, but also in Kona later this year?
I think it's very difficult to draw conclusions regarding Kona. It's people have their own build up to that race, and it's so far away. So now people are probably already thinking that Sam Laidlaw is not the favorite for Kona anymore.
Yeah,
but you know that he
fly under the radar for the third time, maybe.
Exactly. So we won't make that mistake again. That's for sure. But I really was impressed about the performance of Sam Long, for instance.
Yeah.
I think he was like 20 seconds from being lapped out of the race, which is crazy to think of.
And yeah.
Also just the mindset that having been in similar situations, having had a bad swim and then overcoming that is extremely difficult mentally. Like going from thinking you are going to be lapped out and then just beating one competitor at the time. So I thought that was a really impressive performance, both physically, of course, but also mentally. You need some character to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the other French man, Mathis, is always a strong racer. So those were probably the two guys that I knew that Mathis would be strong. Sam Long surprised me really positively. So those are probably the two main takeaways.
Do you know if Mathis is going to race Ironman this season, or because he's really the specialist on the 70.3 and the 200 formats, it seems?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would make sense for him to probably stay this season at the T100 and then maybe only focus on that when he's so like, if you look at his results, he's like almost, I don't think he's ever been outside of top five or something.
Nope.
Which is so he's such a consistent racer, which the overall series will really reward that.
Yeah.
So if I was him, I would definitely consider just doing the T100 series this year, and then maybe I don't know if he wishes to either to even do an Ironman, but.
The first time I noticed him was in the beginning of last year, when he just barely missed the win in a sprint duel with Sam Laidlaw in Gran Canaria. So he's really the real deal there.
Yeah, he performed. Also, what was noticeable last season was that he started, I think, as you say, in Gran Canaria and raced until so late in the season, and he was just constantly getting podiums. So he's really from that you can see that he's a very consistent racer. So he will probably be one of the guys that's going to perform well in a lot of these C100 races.
Did you and the other pro guys have time to see the women's race? Because a special thing is that you guys race separately. So did you see the women's race?
Yeah, we were actually kind of forced to stay on the speedway because the podium ceremony was after the woman had crossed the finish line. So all the men were actually on the venue spectating and seeing the race of the woman unfold. So
yeah,
that was quite pretty cool. Yeah,
but you know, we live in a time where people talk about equal rights, women's rights, and stuff like that. But if we are honest with ourselves, if we have to be, if it should be completely equal, then you should actually switch. So the girls next time will race at the absolute hottest time of the day, and you guys will have a little bit cooler race.
Yeah,
is that true?
I really noticed when I was spectating the women's race after the sun bikes was going down, the temperature like dropped maybe 10 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
So it was completely different conditions, but then again their race probably ended at 8 in the evening, so that's also a thing that is making it a little bit more tricky. So it has like ups and downs, and I think PTO is going to switch things around quite a lot and mix up, so they have some races in the heat, some races in colder conditions, sometimes the women are going first, sometimes the men. So I think there will be plenty of opportunities for the women also to race in heat.
I got a lot of personal messages asking about India Lee because people didn't really knew her. They hadn't seen any big results from her. But of course, if you go into the results and look, she actually have some, for instance, a second place finish in Ironman Florida. So and a long short distance career as well. But from spectating, can you maybe explain why India Lee prevails in such a strong field like the one we saw?
Yeah, I think obviously I don't know her personally, but from speaking to a lot of the athletes that is training with her and she surrounds herself with, it sounds like this kind of result has been in the pipeline for some time.
Yeah.
And has been. Like people have known that she was definitely capable of racing against the best people in the world, and then it's just such beautiful thing to see when it actually happens. And we were standing at the finish line, seeing her crossing it, and she was like completely in disbelief. So that was a great thing to witness.
Yeah, tears of joy.
I think, yeah, exactly. But if you ask, when you ask if what made kind of the difference in that, I think it was probably similar things to our race. Obviously, it wasn't as hot, but if you look on how she paced everything, it was she had a swim, I can't remember the deficit to Lucy Charles out of the water, but it was probably similar to the one I had to the lead group. And then Lucy like increased a little bit to begin with, and India was just constantly pacing herself alone, and then towards the end started gaining time on her so that they basically entered transition two together. And then Lucy Charles also went out a little bit quicker than India Lee did on the run, and she again stayed within her comfort zone and just tried to like tick along and wait and see what happens. And then she overtook her, I think, can't remember, but quite deeply into the race. And so I think it was quite similar tactics there, actually, about staying, like being patient and being optimistic about the plan you have planned is actually going to work out.
What was interesting, if you saw the finish of India Lee in disbelief, tears of joy, and your finish, of course, showing your emotions, but it's more like you fist pump Kasper, job done, with a Danish, yeah, tak. Meaning, it's, yes, please. It's just like you show, well, we knew that we were capable of this. We just had to, you know, execute, and you did. So is that also what you feel yourself, that, well, I know from these data that I'm capable of winning this. If I only do the protocol, if I follow along, then I know I'm going to win this. Is that totally wrong of me to assume this?
Yeah, I think the it's probably the first time I've crossed the finish line where I actually like have been shouting and celebrating as people usually do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I've been quiet. When I won in Roth, for instance, it was more like emotional. I was like, yeah, also an Ironman is such a long day. So,
yeah.
But here it was more, I think it was just the fact that I feel like I haven't performed at all to the ability I have shown in training on this distance before.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been quite frustrating. And then some people have been kind of making fun of the training video we put out, that it's not real data, or it's not about what you do in training, it's what you do in the race. So
yeah.
I think just it was a lot of both for me to actually prove that I can deliver on the PTO distance as well.
Yeah,
I've had a second and a third place before, but both times I still think I had some potential left to show. And then also, yeah, it was just a big relief for me to perform on that distance. And
yeah.
Then for the first tier 100 race as well, it was quite special.
We talked about this in a previous podcast with your coach, Jens Petersen Bach, with you having beginning to show an almost Jan Frodeno-ish ability to take your weaknesses or take weak points and then, you know, turning things around, really work on these details, like ticking every boxes, turning every stone. So that's also a part of the story, that you were really, really good at doing this, making this happen.
Yeah, I think that's what I think it comes down to the team that I surround myself with.
Yeah.
And I really believe that those guys that are helping me and the people I have in my corner are like the best in the business in all the areas that they are working in. So it, for instance, with the not a lot of people were aware of how much the conditions would affect performance, but because I'm working very closely with a physiologist that knows stuff like that and is able to read up on scientific articles and everything, we was like much better prepared than a lot of the other guys were. So I think it's not just something that comes down to me. It comes down to surrounding myself with a team that really knows what they are doing in every aspect, and that makes it much more easy. Of course, I'm the one doing the work on a daily basis and everything, but I wouldn't be able to improve on those things if it wasn't for them.
Exactly. If we talk about the T100 series in itself, I think you guys have signed a contract for, is it 5 races plus the final? Isn't that right? Yeah. But you, if you saw the results, you had like for the men at least like 30% dropout. So a lot of these guys, they are under pressure now. If they sort of had other races, they were going to do, but now at least you can, you there's a little bit of pressure off your shoulders now to maybe have an extra one in the back, because I believe it's your 3 best results that counts, right?
Yeah, and the grand final.
And the
so
grand
3 best results plus the grand final.
Yeah, exactly. So is that something you have been been thinking about a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. It's always good to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
I think some of the guys were probably not thinking very well, because they it seems that it was raced as if it was like a one-day championship race.
Yeah.
But people have to remember that this is now a series where, like, if you just made it through, you would still have gotten points for the series. So mm-hmm. it really, you have to be aware of that every position in a series like this actually counts. And that's also something Kasper and I were talking quite a lot about going into the race. Is like, if you don't have the day you were dreaming of, you still have to fight until the end, because like placing one position better can make a huge difference in the overall ranking at the end of the season, which is, it's very difficult to be aware of that during the race, but it's something new that we have to remind ourselves of. And then I think it's not very good to see so many dropouts. Of course, I believe a lot of them have good reasons, but it doesn't look good when it's like the first season and everyone has been talking about this race and then 6 or 7 guys drops out. So that's a bit of a shame also for those that actually make it through and end up maybe in a like 10th place. It doesn't look good if only 13 people like complete the race.
So do you believe, I heard on another podcast that some of the guys who are close to the guys who arrange the race, that maybe in the future there will be a little bit more people let into the race, like 25, maybe even 30 guys. What do you think is the future here? Can I ask in another way? Is 20 pros, is that too small of a group, do you think?
I think it's very difficult to say when we haven't had that many races, but for sure, if it's going to be like that like 6 people are ending up not finishing every race, then it's probably too little. But for me personally, I think it's a huge advantage to me that also with the swim this time, it was much more like easier to navigate everything because it's so few people. So I think fewer athletes really suits a guy like me or Sam Long, for instance. But I think we still need to see a bit how everything plays out, because now I didn't spectate on television, but I believe it was probably still quite exciting up front to see the battles going on. So I think we will have to wait and see a bit, but I can understand both sides of the equation that,
Exactly. But another thing that people might not think too much about is that now the T100 is actually also the official world championship. It's what you're actually battling for here. Does that play into your thoughts as well, that you can have something on your resume, on your palmarès, as they say in cycling, that it will be there forever if you manage to do well in the other races as well?
Yeah, for sure. It's really motivating, and I think it's a little bit difficult to kind of know what status this one will get in the history books in the future. But for me, it's just such a great opportunity to race against mm-hmm. the best people in the world and on a regular basis. And I think it's probably not until in a few years that we really know how big a thing it's going to be. We will have to wait and see on that one as well. I'll definitely do my best to become the first.
Yeah, and I think we will know you very badly if that didn't happen. Magnus, have you publicly announced the rest of your season? Of course, we know that you're going to race Kona. We know about the T100s. Are you still not sure about the rest of the season? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm actually very sure of, like, we have made a very clear plan, but of course it's maybe to change depending on what happens, but so far it will be Singapore next, and then I haven't announced it yet, but it will be in a few days, then I'll do Challenge Rock again, see if I can win that race for the third time in a row. It would be quite special to me. There is a very big block of training between Singapore and Roth, so that is absolutely perfect.
Legendary.
And then I'll do the series, some of the races in that, and of course Kona.
Have you heard the rumor that a certain Norwegian, who's also a multiple 70.3 world champion, and is not Blumenfeld, maybe thinks about showing up to that race? What do you think about that? Wouldn't that be extra motivation for a guy like you, that you really get a run for your money?
Yeah, he is very welcome to come to Roth.
Yeah.
That would be super cool to race against him. But I think there is still a long way for him to get back in shape.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it seems that he's still not running that much, like only like doing twice a week run sessions. So going from that to a full Ironman is quite a big task. But if there is someone that can do it on like a small amount of training, it's probably Gustav. So I'm really hoping both for the race, but also for him in general, that he is soon back as we used to know him. It's really sad to see how much he has been struggling with everything.
Exactly. I imagine, I don't know, on the Turbo, have you ever seen some of the previous races, like with Macca versus some of the German guys in the early, I think it's 2003-2004, they are really like battling it out, like running neck and neck all the way to the finish line. Some of the most epic races ever done.
Yeah, that would be a dream come true.
like the one you had in, I think, was it your first Ironman race where you ran? Was it in Texas?
Yeah. That is probably still one of the greatest memories I have with the sport of triathlon. Is those kind of battles? They are just so special. And then, as it was also my first full distance, it means quite a lot. And it's probably what taught me that we knew from training that I was a decent runner, but hadn't really showed anything before that. So that is really probably what gave me the motivation and confidence to get to the next level also in racing.
Exactly. Magnus, I know actually you came from a bit of a running background before you turned into triathlon. So do you keep updated in the running environment?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
It depends quite a lot. Sometimes I'm listening to some running podcasts. Yeah.
There's actually an Aarhus-based one called Sidelinjen. They actually talked about you and your video, the one you made with Sweat Elite. So what I was about to say is that people outside of the triathlon community who also knows how to train, who trains a lot, actually mention you as a guy who really stands out in the way you approach and the way you train and how much you train and how serious it is. So how does that make you feel that you are a guy who in every endurance community is looked upon as a standout person?
Yeah, I mean, if you can make the runners like a triathlete or cyclists talk about triathletes, then you are probably doing something right. Because they tend to not really like the style that triathletes have and so on. So, no, but I mean, that's obviously super great of them. And it means that we are on the right path, I guess. And it's cool that I'm being recognized in other areas, arenas, other sports and everything, also outside of sport in general. So I can really notice that. And it's quite motivating and uplifting as well to see that. It wasn't something I ever dreamt of before, but it's actually quite nice to get that kind of recognition.
I think actually we managed to get a solid 45 minutes of talk here, Magnus. Thank you so much. What about rest of the day? Ice cream contest with Tor or your girlfriend? What's going to happen?
I have a few meetings with my coach and some other people. So, and then some easy sessions in between that. So, it's pretty relaxed.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to also ask you for my son, who is 9 years old. He said, "Dad, I'm so proud that you talk to all these famous people. Can you maybe get me an autograph?" So Magnus, my final question here, do you in fact have a poster or a picture of yourself with an autograph that you can send to me as a present for my son?
I think we can make that happen. Yes.
Okay. I'm so pleased. Thank you so much. And once again, Magnus, congratulations for the first, but maybe not the last win in the T100 series.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Thank you so much, Magnus, and please give my regards to everyone in Copenhagen.
I'll do that. Thanks
okay.
For having me.
Thank you, Magnus. See you around.
Thanks. Yeah. See you. Bye bye.
Bye.
No, I am done. Another. Bye. Now I'm done. I have no power.